This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Third and 10. Four-man rush. It's Goff throwing over the middle, and it's picked off Jeremy Chinn. And Washington will be going to the NFC Championship for the first time in 33 years.
That was the Fox call of the Commanders beating the Lions by 14 on Saturday night. 8 days later, they'll be at the Lincoln Philly against the ESZLCRTS.
The El Zogles.
Eagles. Grant and Danny welcoming you back. We're taking you up to 6:30 on the Fan. We've got Caps tickets at 4. And at 5 o'clock, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports wrote a piece on Jaden Daniels. We want to ask him about a historic rookie season for JD5. The show's brought to you today by our friends, Kondori and Murad.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Kondori and Murad can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them the Grant Nanny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
So the question we've got for you guys is, I guess, who are you more scared of? But really, who has a better chance to wreck the game? And who does Washington have to be more aware of possibly beating them almost single-handedly this weekend? Saquon Barkley, offensively, who ran for 2,005 yards and 13 touchdowns, or Jalen Carter, the game-wrecking defensive tackle for the Eagles. So let's just present the years that both of these guys had. Specifically against Washington, I mentioned that Barkley's run for 146 and 150, which shouldn't surprise you because the Commanders are 26th in DVOA against the run this year. But that's a little bit misleading in that against the Commanders, he hit more home runs, even though it wasn't like consistently just bludgeoning them. I thought they did a really good job against him for 2.5, 3 quarters in Philly. And then he ended up ripping off touchdown runs of 25-plus a couple times in the fourth quarter.
That's right.
Here, he had the 70-plus yard touchdown in the first quarter of the second game, and he ran for 100 yards in the first quarter. And then after that, it was like 17 carries for 40 yards or whatever. I mean, he was pretty much held in check. Again, for the majority, or about half in that case, of the game, but close to three quarters. Now, everyone's taking victory laps about that. That's kind of how it's designed to go for him. That's what it is. Like, the whole idea is that eventually he's going to pop a big one on.
Yeah, the waves crashing on the shore, eventually you don't have a beach left. That's what it is.
He's a home run hitter. So, like, yeah, you might have, through 15 carries, held me to 54 yards. Good job, but now you're getting tired. And we're going to keep going. And now what happens? And the whole bet that you make with Saquon Barkley being as involved in the offense as Nick Sirianni does is that eventually you're just not going to fit the run perfectly. Someone's going to be out of their lane. Someone's going to miss a tackle. And he will make you wrong. And the way he does that is not by getting 5 or 10 more than he's supposed to, but getting 50 or 60.
Yeah, getting 60 in a tutty. Yeah, I mean, he's had the best running back season in some time. He was incredible. And I think it's a great situation with an excellent offensive line, something he was not familiar with in New York. A quarterback that's a threat to run, not just in scramble situations like Daniel Jones was, but Jalen Hurts is one of the better running quarterbacks in football when he's healthy. Then you add in a pass-catching tight end that can do both, and great receivers on the outside where everything is dangerous. If you're an opposing defense, this is as good a situation for a running back as you're going to find for a bell cow like him. He was unbelievable from start to finish.
I'm not going to count their 34-6 win over the Cowboys where they basically pulled guys and just stopped caring part of the way through the game. If you take that out of the equation, in like 12 of his last 13 games, he's taken the game over. Eventually. I'm going to run through his rushing totals really quickly over those 13 weeks, with the only game where he didn't being a game against Pittsburgh, where he was held to 3.4 yards per carry and 65 yards on 19 attempts. So here are the 65 in there about a month ago. But here's his rushing totals since they got really good out of their bye week and basically said, we're going to let Saquon cook. 205, 119, 167, 150, 65, 124, 107, 255, 146, 159, 108, 176. On the season, Danny, he had six 150-yard games. And you do that mostly by hitting home runs. In those games, he had carries of 72, 78 and 70, 68, 65. Big way to get there is to just have the one play where there's a lapse. So I guess my reason to say that Saquon is more scary to me is because of the volume. It's just so hard to do everything correctly every single time he's got
24, 25, 26 times. Yeah. By the way, just a quick side note. He plays well against the Rams, at least did this year. How about 460 yards combined in two matchups against the Rams?
The only team he had more yards against than this one.
I mean, good Lord.
Now, he has always killed this team.
Yes.
Remember when he was with the Giants?
Sure do.
And those Giants teams would come to FedEx end of the year normally, like for these like week 17 game between two terrible teams, and he would always rip off one crazy long run. Didn't matter how bad they were, how bad the offense was. He would always hit a homer against, wasn't the Commanders, but Washington. So the other side of the ball, Jalen Carter. I'm going to use Daron Payne as the comp because Allen wasn't healthy, and Payne's the big money D tackle here. On the season, PFF has assigned Daron Payne with 38 pressures. Jalen Carter has 65 pressures this year. 65 to Payne's 38. Daron Payne via PFF this season, Danny, has been credited with hitting the quarterback on three occasions, non-sacks.
Which, by the way, is comically low. I mean, that's absurd. That's a quick side.
It's just a little bit ridiculous.
I know.
Jalen Carter, 15. That's 5X on that category. He has hurried the quarterback in the decision-making process 43 times. Daron Payne has done that 30 times this season. What he's done as a pass rusher's pretty astounding. And the most amazing thing when you watch him, I think, this guy does not come off the field. Have you seen his percentage of play numbers?
It's absurd.
It's astounding at his size. Just to give you another comp, right? The Eagles have played 18 games. The Commanders have played 19 games. Daron Payne did have the finger injury against the Bucs, so he missed a little time. And occasionally here and there you get dinged up. But he's played in every game this year, okay? So track with me for a second. Mm-hmm. Daron Payne's played in 19 games. Jalen Carter's played in 18 games. You want to know what their snap counts were? Daron Payne on the field for a total of 796 snaps. That's a lot for a D-tackle. He does a pretty good job staying on the field. Jalen Carter, 961.
Golly. That's ridiculous.
A couple hundred more plays, having played in one fewer football game. They've played fewer games. This guy plays every single down.
It's like 10, 12 more plays per week.
It's like Aaron Donald. There aren't humans like this. It's insane.
So the sack numbers aren't outrageous. And this is one of those things we talked about this a billion times when it came to John Allen and others. If you replayed his season, he'd end up with more than 4.5 sacks.
Yeah, and I would make the case, he's the way they design stuff, he's not really supposed to have 10 sacks, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. He's going to in his career because he's an animal sent from another planet to ruin everything and to eat worlds. But he basically is just the play blower upper. Like, you're the guy that's going to ruin the offense's time. They're accounting for you, and everyone else is going to feast because of it.
He also has a bunch of batted passes at the line of scrimmage, too. Like, this is the thing that I beg for all the time. If you're not getting home, stay in your lanes, get those hands up. Let's disrupt some of those passing lanes. He does that with great effect as well. There's nothing this guy can't do. To me, he is the sort of the solar system here. He's the sun, and everything else revolves around him. You can play a coverage a certain way. You can roll a safety close to the line of scrimmage. You can have linebackers do this. You can twist. You can stunt. Everything is about the fact that you're either going to double-team him, which now leaves a numbers advantage for you and the rest of your defense, or he's going to take your one guy, throw him into the balcony, Into the balcony? That didn't make sense.
Into the balcony.
Yeah, you throw him into the stands and ruin your play. So it's your choice, however you want to do it, offense. Would you like him to ruin your play? Or would you like someone else to be able to be free to make a tackle?
So looking those numbers up, the Eagles on the year have 16 batted passes. 7 of them attributed to Jalen Carter. About half.
Mm-hmm.
Washington does not have a defensive lineman with more than 2 passes batted at the line. So just another area where, with that length, he's a problem. You're going to have to move around in the pocket, find a throwing lane if you're Jaden Daniels. And you don't have Sam Cosmi.
Yep.
Who's going to be lined up for the most part. I don't know how much they flip him and which side he's on or whatever. But
test it a couple times if I was them.
There's going to be a lot of times where he's going up against whoever they decide to replace Cosmi with. I think that's probably Trent Scott at guard, and they just do what they did in the last game. Because I was sitting there thinking, when Cosmi went down, put Cornelius Lucas at right tackle and kick Wiley into guard where he played when he was with Kansas City winning a Super Bowl in the past. They didn't want to change his position. He hasn't played that in a long time, which I get. But now you've got a week and some practice time. So they do have some options. But I think Trent Scott played admirably enough, and maybe even better than he had at tackle, that they might go, huh, all right, let's see where this gets us. But to me, this is about Cliff Kingsbury. Respectfully to Trent Scott or Wiley or anybody else, whoever's playing at guard, Michael Dieter, Chris Paul, doesn't matter. Respectfully, I don't trust you against Jalen Carter. And that's not a knock.
That's true for anybody. By the way, I wouldn't have trusted Sam Cosmi one-on-one.
That's a terrible matchup, too, and he's one of the better guards that you've got in the division. This is about Kingsbury just not letting him take the game over. And so my answer to the question we're asking, who are you more worried about, is Barkley, because I'm going to coach the game to make sure that Carter does not beat me. I've got to. I don't have a choice. I can't do that with Barkley. I can't scheme around him. He's coming to the house whether I want him to or not.
That's right, yeah. He's on. It doesn't matter if he's invited.
At 3 p.m., he's knocking on the door. I can make sure. Now, I'm not saying I win the game, but I can guarantee you going into a game, it's not going to be Jalen Carter, because I can intentionally walk him all day long, essentially, with how I call the game. Make sense?
It does, yeah.
I'm going with Barkley.
To me, it's Carter, and I understand your point. I'm basically counting the Barkley in my equation for what the game is. In other words, I can't stop him. Nobody has. That's a 2,000-yard rusher. He crushed it against me, and he will again. He's going to go for a long run. The point for me is my strength, talking about Washington, is my offense, my ability to stay on the field, my ability to get those fourth downs and shorts, my ability to convert, my ability to have Jaden Daniels do what he does. The guy that can ruin that is Jalen Carter. So if my strength is negated, I'm losing. And that's where my concern is. If Barkley goes off and has 150 yards, I can win. I've done that once already. If Jalen Carter ruins it, I lose. He's done that once already, thinking about that first game. So to me, it's based on me more than it is that guy. Because I understand your point is 100% correct. Saquon Barkley is ridiculous. And if you're worried about him going nuts, it's happening, right? And that's kind of my point, though, is I'm not worried about it. I'm resigned to it. But I need my strength to remain a strength. And if it does, I can win the game.
It is also amazing to me how often offensive coaches just kind of decide, I'm not going to change everything we do to protect against this guy. We're going to run our thing. And we think our thing's better than theirs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how many times do you watch a game and you're like, why is a tight end blocking Micah Parsons? Like, why was this not specific?
Yeah, how is that ever?
But teams do that. And yeah. I just hope Kingsbury doesn't in this situation. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes there's just a confidence in your building where you go, we like our guys. I like Trent Scott. I think, I'm just making this up, but like, I think Michael Dieter can do it. Because I know he had a good practice this week or whatever. You just see that sometimes and it's like, no, let's not rely on that. Let's try to do something different than we would have.
Let's not beat our head against the wall and call it toughness.
Exactly. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. Kurt is in Ashburn. Who are you more worried about, Carter or Barkley?
Real quickly, let me say something else that's been discussed several times on this station today is the cost of going to a Super Bowl. I went to the 1983 Super Bowl, the first Gibbs Super Bowl, or beat the Dolphins. Seat was $250. I learned that the Rose Bowl was part of a public park complex, so there are tennis courts, swimming pools, basketball courts, etc. A huge field, and get this, they didn't charge anything for parking.
That's awesome. Yeah, different time. I mean, back then it probably cost $0.88 to go to a movie or whatever, too. And now I'm paying $20 for me and $17 for my kids on the weekend.
Yeah, I'm definitely priced out of it. Anyway, to talk about Barkley, that's my choice. To use a baseball analogy, he's in scoring position when he's at the plate. I mean, he's going to get 20 opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get 20 opportunities to bust one loose. Whereas this other guy will have many opportunities, but they're not going to be dramatic, potentially dramatic as Barkley.
It's a really well said.
Yep.
I was watching the pregame show ahead of Eagles-Rams last week. I think it was Fox. And I don't remember who made the point, but they said something like, defensively, your job is to cut down on the explosives and not allow the huge play. Normally, that means keeping two safeties deep, dropping to 30 yards at the snap, you know, whatever. But like in this case, that is Barkley in the running game. Like there's not really examples of that in recent years where a team's home run threat and the big play threat, so to speak,
is off of handoffs or pitches.
Was the running game. Let's go to Nick in Leesburg on G&D. What's up, Nick?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Ready.
I got Carter as my game wrecker here. So I agree with you, Danny. Saquon's good for his 150. Hopefully he doesn't get the end zone, but, you know, he's almost got a voucher for it, right? One free ticket. I think Carter's the big problem. If we don't get our running game going and some sort of momentum here, I like Jaden. I like his arm. He's a great passer, but we need that running game to kind of keep him off balance, you know? We can't just keep running into a brick wall. Secondly, I want to say, against the teams that have had good running attacks this year, if we didn't weather the storm and, you know, stop them from going 150, we made great second-half adjustments. Bijan Robinson, look at the second half of the Falcons game. Derrick Henry didn't totally kill us early on in the season. Saquon, granted, like I said, he's good for his 150 and his touchdown, but we can weather that storm, but our offense has got to get going.
So that's, I think, a really good call. Two things I want to point out really fast. The first is, specific to Bijan Robinson in Atlanta, the reason he didn't do anything in the second half was they were never on the field. And that was the case, to a lesser extent, against Baltimore on the road, too. That is their best defense against Barkley.
Yep.
Is going to be to possess the football, to keep the football, because to run the ball like this team wants to, they need snaps, they need plays, they need long drives. So if you, like the Atlanta game, have an entire third quarter where Atlanta had quite literally three plays on a three and out.
That's all they got.
And you had the rest of the football. Well, all of a sudden, Robinson, who had 85 at halftime, still has 88 when you're going into the fourth quarter. The second thing I want to redirect to you that he mentioned was in talking about the inability to run the game run the ball recently in the run game and how much that's going to affect Carter. And I think it's a great point. If they can't run the ball enough, because that's where he's more pedestrian. He's better than average, but he's just an okay player against the run, if you look at his grading on PFF and some things. But if they can't keep him honest, now he's just getting upfield.
Yep. Now he's hunting.
They have to run the ball. Doesn't have to be as good as they get against Detroit, who can't stop the run. But it's got to be better than it was the last several weeks, other than the Lions game. They just have to.
And maybe that's the plan. Maybe you go, we're going to deal with these 1 and 2 yard gains, but just make him make tackles. Make him shed the block, shed the double team, maybe try to wear him out that way. Or something, right? Maybe just try to negate that get upfield, ruin the play type stuff. I don't know. This is one of those quandaries where these guys that make a lot of money to make these kind of decisions, this is not an easy puzzle piece to solve. Because the underrated part is, okay, let's never run at Jalen Carter. We know who's going to figure that out, that you're not doing that, is Vic Fangio. If you know where the play is going because it's opposite Jalen Carter, you got a shot to stop it.
I'm running right at Jalen Carter.
And that's my idea. Yeah. So, like, do you do that? Do you test him in that way? There's no good solution against this excellent defense.
Here's a question we'll hit next on Grant and Danny. The ability to run the ball that they had against Detroit, they ran very effectively. They looked great running the football this past weekend, first time in several weeks. Did they figure something out, or was that just a really good matchup because the Lions' defensive front was very porous and bad? Well, let's get to that next. G&D on the Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Big NFL news day today. Ben Johnson had his introductory press conference in Chicago. Most interesting thing I heard him say to the Bears media was, that he thought going into the year the biggest threat to the Lions was the Bears, not the Vikings or the Packers. Now, you're saying that to the Bears media and fan base as you're being introduced as their head coach, but he kind of went over why it was that he felt that way. I just thought that was an interesting thing to say. Like, if you're a Packers or Vikings player, that you might hear that before
wait, what?
The game against him in the division next year.
I mean, the Bears were the darlings, if you remember.
Everyone
was in on them to massively improve, but who knows if they were ready to take the leap. But that's fascinating that he put them ahead of, as you said, the Vikings and Packers.
He also essentially acknowledged that he took the job because he wanted to work with Caleb Williams. So those are some bullet points there. Elsewhere, Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator of the Lions, has also taken a head coaching job. He is the new head coach of the New York Football Jets. So congratulations to Aaron Glenn. I think he'll do a really good job for them. But if you're Dan Campbell in Detroit, you have watched your OC leave. You have watched your DC leave. By the way, their defensive line coach is expected to get the defensive coordinator job in New England for Mike Vrabel with the Patriots. They're going to have a litany of offensive assistants leaving to go be part of the staff that Ben Johnson's going to build in Chicago. And it sounds like Hank Fraley, their O-line coach, who is expected to be Ben Johnson's OC, might actually get an offensive coordinator job where he gets to call his own plays. Where did I see he was going? Was it Seattle, possibly?
Sounds right, yeah.
So there's another possibility to lose even more coaches. I mean, the Lions are going to have a completely new staff around Dan Campbell going into next year. So the Bears might not be the only team in the NFC North that Washington breaks in 2024.
Seriously, right? I mean, you think about that. This band being together and winning a Super Bowl, you would have gone, all right, let's, you know, right off into the night, everybody goes. But instead, they lose the divisional round despite being heavy favorites, and they lose all these guys to try to keep this train rolling.
How about the Jaguars? They have now fired their GM, Trent Baalke. You guys remember when the owner of the team, Shad Khan, was doing that press conference next to Baalke, saying that he was keeping Baalke as his GM, but they had fired Doug Peterson. And somebody asked, would you consider firing Baalke if somebody wants to come here and bring a GM with him? And with Baalke next to him on video, he said, if someone can make the case that we don't need him as our GM and that they could do better, then yeah, we'd be willing to fire him. I'm paraphrasing. Well, I guess that happened.
Well, I think yet another candidate basically was like, I'm not going there. Liam Cohen stayed home in Tampa.
Yeah, multiple guys turned them down.
Right. I think.
Was it Ben Johnson first?
It could have been him first. It could have been someone else. I can't remember which now because there's been multiple candidates who have basically said, I don't like the situation there in Jacksonville. You know what the situation is? It's not the guy from the Jersey Shore. It's Baalke. It's Baalke Bartokomus. Nobody wanted to work with that guy. No coach wants to be like, I'm going to go to this place with that guy there. Now, if there's a GM that knows what he's doing and hasn't rubbed everyone he's ever dealt with the wrong way, I'm being hyperbolic, but it's close to it, then maybe it'd be the exciting chance to work with, I don't know, fill in the GM that you like, right? That's not the case. Baalke is the issue, and now they finally realize that after they lost out on a couple candidates that they really wanted.
I don't think anyone wants to work for that owner necessarily either, but that's probably secondary because he's going to give you a lot of money to do it,
yeah,
and some influence and some power. That is a sneaky, interesting job, I think, for Cliff Kingsbury, by the way. You've got Trevor Lawrence. If he likes Trevor Lawrence in a bad division, I mean, that division is just perpetually won by like a 10-win underachiever, essentially. The only gig that I definitely thought Cliff would leave for was Chicago if he got that offer and got to interview, but they've already moved on. He still isn't doing interviews, and kudos to him, by the way. I like that he's doing this, but he basically told all suitors, I will not be talking to anyone until after our season ends. So that might mean you still have to wait for another few weeks. There's a chance all the jobs are taken at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's been linked in some way to Dallas just because he's from Texas. Sounds like Brian Schottenheimer is the front runner there, which is a referendum of epic proportions on the quality of that job. I mean, if they hire Brian Schottenheimer, you just can't tell me that's not an indictment on how good a job that is. Sorry. Be serious. They've interviewed four people. Only one of them has interviewed with any other team or is on any other team's list. Kellen Moore.
Yeah, they are first team in Dallas. We think we're smarter than everybody and watch this. So maybe it's them trying to prove that or something like that. Like, we've unearthed the gem. But I think and the way I would view it is the way you just said.
I think the best candidates don't want to go there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the case, right? It's more, get paid than it is, you know, a primo job for one of the marquee franchises. But by all means, let the Kardashians in the NFL do what they do. But the Jacksonville one is interesting to me for Kingsbury. On paper, you'd go, well, how much better does it have to be for him to leave the situation where he's still getting head coach money from Arizona as the OC in Washington? And who knows? What if it's that they tack on extra years at $11 million per? What if they throw stupid money at you where you don't worry about losing your head coach salary from Arizona's because you've got four more years of guaranteed head coach money at, you know, way more? Who knows? And if he likes Trevor Lawrence, I mean, that's the thing. The question I've been asking for a little while now is, how sure are we that Trevor Lawrence is actually a good NFL quarterback? The pedigree was the ultimate pedigree. I mean, he was Andrew Luck after Andrew Luck, right? Starting as a freshman, Natty Championship, looked like the most can't-miss surefire dude. I know there's been a lot of bad around him. I'm fully aware of that. But we're still really talking about one year where you'd go, okay, that was really good. Other than that, I think it's been disappointing. And there are reasons for it, maybe even excuses. But still, to leave the nest, to go there with the turmoil, that would take a lot.
All those bad teams, stinks to be them. Looking down on them from our perch here, headed to the NFC Championship
game. That's right,
game,
yeah.
They'll be trying to do what Washington did next year when they go from hiring a new coach because they stunk in 2024 to trying to get to a conference championship game in the 2025 season. Speaking of which, I asked this question going to the break. I want to get your thoughts. Did the Commanders fix something in their running game Saturday night in Detroit, or are the Lions just that bad at stopping the run? Because my answer is B, not A. I think the Lions are just that bad at stopping the run. But you have to at least acknowledge, if that is your answer, that Brian Robinson looked faster, more explosive, just more capable than he had in weeks, regardless of who they were playing.
That's my only counter. So the answer, I think, is it's the Lions, and they helped. Okay, I think if you're having a pie, that's 75 or 80% of the pie. The other 20%, though, is Brian Robinson looked better than he has. And you're just going to go, what do you mean? Like, he gained more yards? No, it's the eye test. I don't know how to say it other than that.
He was faster.
The burst, the decisiveness, the vision. Because basically for the last couple of months, non-Tennessee game, but if you made him chop his feet at all, it was like a Mack truck overweight in an alleyway trying to make a turn. It looked awkward and cumbersome and unathletic to a degree for a guy of that, you know, NFL caliber. And that's not how he looked this past week. Even when it wasn't there initially, he's sort of bouncing stuff, keeping his feet churning, you know, driving forward. He looked like the guy that for the first half of the season was on his way to 1,200 yards and double-digit touchdowns that went away, frankly, most of the second half of the year. That's what he looks like. So I don't think you have the same kind of success against Philly. I'm under no illusion, okay? But zero becomes two. Two becomes 3.5. That, to me, is what I care about in this game. You do it just enough to show it so that Jaden Daniels can work magic. I want a second and 7, not second and 11. Like, that's the key to me.
Let's go to Drew in Graysonville on Grant and Danny. Drew, do you think the Commanders fixed their running game, or do you think the Lions were just terrible at stopping the run?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think the Lions were a little bit asleep. They were looking past us. But I do think that some of our running game might have been B-Rob being a little hurt. Maybe he's getting healthy. And also Jaden was on fire. And I think Jaden elevates everyone around. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping happens in Philly. I mean, you made the comment before, who's the most dangerous man on the field Sunday? It's going to be Jaden. So, and I think that...
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we didn't mention him in the combo. Just because we're talking about the eagle that could wreck the game, you don't have to have this conversation on WIP, though. Jaden Daniels or, I mean, you could just laugh out loud when somebody asks that question. He's the guy.
He's the
great. The Commanders have a really good chance to win. If he's bad, then they're going to lose by a good bit, probably. And you're back to the drawing board going into next year. Let's go to Mike in Orange. Mike, the high school in Orange. I always botch this. If it's the Hornets, the Yellow Jackets, I'm going to say home of the Yellow Jackets. Am I right?
I don't know. I wasn't born in Orange.
Oh, that's disappointing. Mm. I'll do a little research.
I was raised in Woodbridge. I was born in Alexandria on Seminary Road.
Oh, okay. I used to live on Seminary Road. Woodbridge, home of the Vikings, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's where I graduated from. But anyway, I'm going back to when I was 8 years old, my parents asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and that was the year that the Dolphins beat the Redskins. And I told my parents I wanted a Dolphins jacket, and they got me one. and all my friends in Woodbridge beat me up and ruined my jacket. So guess what happened to me? I was a Redskins fan from then on and always have been and will never change. I can't believe what's going on, the euphoria of today with what's going on with Jaden Daniels. I never thought in a million years a rookie quarterback for this team, as bad as it was last year, to get to where we're at.
Appreciate you, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. That's all true.
It's a little introspection there. I like that.
It's a good question you asked, but here's my story.
I mean, that is his answer to...
Did they find something in the run game?
Have they fixed the running
game? You see, I had a Dolphins jacket, and I got beat up for it.
Well, we started with him being in orange, but not being able to give me the information I needed on orange.
I think it's Fighting Hornet.
Hornet?
I think it's Hornet. I think you do that every time. I think you go, is it Yellow Jacket?
I think I always go Hornet and it's Yellow Jacket.
No, I think it's the other way around. I think you know it's Hornet, but question yourself. It turns into Yellow Jacket, and that you go, well, why are there orange Yellow Jackets? That doesn't make any sense. I think it's Hornet.
It can't be orange. Oh, you might be right. Because orange and yellow juxtaposing together doesn't...
Can't have it. Now, I know the problem is like, well, orange isn't the color. It's the name of the city. But come on, dude. It's orange. Everyone, yeah. It's the same letter. Letters.
Let's go to Mike in Gaithersburg on G&D. What's up, Mike?
What's up, Dad? How you doing today, sir?
Buddy.
Good. We're coming out your way, by the way. Kind of. But
on the
same state as you. I don't know where Bethesda and Gaithersburg are comparatively.
Just further.
But we're going to be doing a Friday field trip in Bethesda.
I look forward to seeing you guys one day up there. Yes, sir. What I was commenting on, the reason why Commanders had great success against Tampa Bay and Detroit is because they had to have an artificial pass rush. They can't use their four-man, you know, their four-down linemen to cause havoc. And that's why Jaden Daniels was able to dominate. And that's why you'll see the problems with the Spagnolas and everyone else who has control blitzes. And that's why Jalen Carter is the key, because if they can have, you know what I'm saying, pressure up the middle and put pressure on Daniels, then it affects him because it's not a unnatural pass blitz. You know what I mean? It's not a natural rush. You're not using other schemes and other players that's putting you know, pressure on the secondary and so on and so forth.
It's a great
smart
point.
Call, yeah.
He did a nice job, Daniels did. Nice is not cut it. I mean, he did a special elite job this past weekend against the blitz, but you're right, he's able to see where it's coming from and throw behind it. If you could just generate pressure from the interior with your tackle, it's a different story. And to the Eagles credit, the first game against Philly on the road back on November 14th, I think it was, they did that, and he looked the worst he has all season long. They got constant pressure and penetration. He was flustered, didn't even throw for 200 yards, had a bad pick in that game, had another couple of would-be interceptions that were dropped, if you remember. He was flustered. But the second time they played the Eagles, very, very different story. He threw 5 touchdown passes in that game. I will say they're the only team that multiple times this year has kind of fooled him a little bit. Remember, he had the 2 bad interceptions in the second game, had the 5 touchdowns, and then he had a couple of those throws middle of the field where you're like, oh boy, how did you not see that guy? He has not looked like that all year in any other game, really.
No.
And somehow the Eagles and Vic Fangio, on at least 4 throws in the middle of the field, have done that to him.
Well, they blitz among the least percentage-wise in the NFL.
I think that's actually part of it.
I think it's 5th or 6th. And you know, you think of the Atlanta game as well, where a guy drops from what looks like he's going to pass rush, drops into coverage, would fool a fooled enemy. It's just really good defense that where Daniels threw a pick. So I think, to me, when you can cover with that, man, it's that Giants formula from the Eli Manning Super Bowl years where the defense won it. Eli Manning was also on the team. But, yeah, I mean, that you can rush with the front four, see the Carolina Panthers going to 15 wins, going to the Super Bowl, those Giants teams. You can do that. It's much easier to play defense.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Our double play is next, and we're giving away Caps tickets ahead of the Blitz in 20 minutes at the top of the hour, right at 4 o'clock. You're listening to the Fan. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on the Fan. We're giving away Caps tickets in 10 minutes. You're going to be able to listen to the NFC Championship game right here on the Fan Sunday. Commanders, Eagles playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl. We'll have every play of the game, plus full pregame and postgame coverage. Coverage begins at 9 a.m., one of the biggest days and show history, station history, and for many of you guys as fans since 1991. We'll have it covered all day long on 106.7 The Fan. We should also remind you that we're going to be out and about partying Friday for a field trip. We're going to be in Bethesda at Caddy's on Cordell.
The house that Jim Riggleman built. We will be there all show long. That place rules. It is a iconic spot there in the heart of Bethesda. It is longstanding. It just feels fitting that that's where we're going for this one.
For people that don't get that reference from Danny, Jim Riggleman, of course, is the former manager here in Washington with the Nationals. He did one of the wildest things I've ever seen in sports.
It's insane.
In fact, I was on the air when it happened.
That's so weird. We both were in totally different capacities. I was filling in doing the post-game show that day.
Really?
Yeah.
So I was on the beat still, I'm sure. But I was filling in for somebody that day at the Fan, and I was at the radio station. And sure enough, Jim Riggleman just didn't get on the bus. Basically what happened was, the way the story goes, I guess he and Rizzo are talking in his office, and he wants an extension. And he's like, if I don't get an extension, I'm not continuing the season. I'm just not getting on the bus. And essentially he didn't. He just quit right then and there in the middle of the season. So where Caddies comes into play is he was on the Junkies, I think every week at that point, doing his like managerial interview or whatever. And so they tracked him down and got him on the show. And he said that he basically went out and just went over and drank at Caddies, and that's where he was all night.
And that's where he went. And famously so. So just
think about that. That's a coach, in this case a manager, a coach just quitting in the middle of the season. Just a thing he did.
Bluff called. So I'm doing the postgame show, the normal thing with Charlie and Dave, and we're doing a little bit of crosstalk, and we're waiting for the go-ahead to go down to the manager's press conference. No manager's press conference. We keep going. There's no manager's press conference. We keep going. No manager's press conference. Finally, we go, we're getting word that Mike Rizzo is going to talk, not Jim Riggleman. What is going on? And Mike Rizzo explains that we didn't see eye to eye, so he took off. Like, he's out of here. And that's the end of the story. Holy crap.
Yeah, I guess you don't try to bluff Mike Rizzo.
I wouldn't. Don't sit down and play poker, is what I'll tell you.
That's the lesson learned there. All right, it's time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Woeful. Embarrassing. Horrendous probably doesn't even begin to cover it, GP. All-time bad. I am still reeling from it. I am still recovering from it. I don't know that my ego is going to be the same. Pick up hoops last night. Oh, this is bad, my friend. I have had bad nights before. This takes the cake. Multiple times. Not only could I couldn't hit a shot. Let's start there. That's just the beginning. That's the tip of the old iceberg, okay? Throwing up masonry. These are all good looks. A lot of in and outs. Just close, but no cigar. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Doesn't count in hoops. Brutal from the inside. Brutal from the outside. Nowhere. Finally, okay, I'm not going to shoot. I'll just help the team. Wrong. Nobody in the history of basketball, that includes crunch time Bradley Beal, where everybody clears out at the end of the shot clock / quarter, and he dribbles off his leg. I did that more than that last night. Brutal. More turnovers than points. In fact, it was so bad that when you do the bit, I don't know if you do this, when you play your pickup hoop games that you organize on a weekly basis. But it's like, hey, let's shoot for teams. First four guys to make it, right? Shoot a free throw. I missed my free throw. Now, that doesn't sound like much to most folks. I will tell you this, in the history of me playing in this game, I've never missed a free throw. I'm always one of the people that makes the free throw that I can be on a team. That's how bad it was going last night that I missed a free throw. People that knew me in high school know how big a deal that is, that I would miss a free throw. That's not something that happens. It doesn't occur. And it did last night. That's how bad it was. Embarrassing. I don't even have the stats.
So if you guys needed your update on Danny's pickup basketball performance last night before you went on with your day, consider yourself updated. We got that out of the way.
Yeah, now it's information. I felt so bad, I bought a new pickleball paddle to make myself feel better.
Wow, look at you.
I that was self-therapy. By the way, honey, don't worry about the charge on the credit card. That was me. I did that.
Over under $200.
Anyway, the point is... No. What? The point is...
300.
No, Grant, don't just say numbers. Anyway, I needed something to make myself feel better.
$349.99.
No, I'm not telling that. I'm not saying. I'm not going to say I got something to make myself feel better. I had a discount code, which was nice.
Did it start with a 3?
I respect you. I respect you a lot.
Beltway Blitz is next. We're giving away Caps tickets on G&D.